Welcome to the New Age Outro Home Podcast. My name is Isaac Kamens. This is a bi-weekly podcast where my friend Jess O'Brien and I discuss internal martial arts, Qigong, and meditation. This week, we continue our discussion on Yang-style master Chen Wei Ming and looking at his book, Tai Chi Da Wen. We explore a couple more questions and answers that he presents in the book, including a bunch of stuff about push hands. Then we return to the Tai Chi Classics, which asks the question, what is the purpose of Tai Chi Chuan? So we explore some reasons for doing Tai Chi and what's made Tai Chi popular over the years, including its ability to meld martial arts and health practices. So hope you enjoy that. Take care of yourselves. Thanks for listening. Thanks for all your support and be well.
Returning to the discussion of Yang style Tai Chi, we're going to continue reading from some of the works of Chen Wei Ming, the student of the Yang style popularizer Yang Cheng Fu back in the early 20th century. So moving on to Tai Chi Ta Wen. This is the book of question and answers that Chen Wei Ming created. It was published in 1929 in Shanghai, then republished in the Republic of China, Taipei, in 1967, and then translated by Robert W. Smith and Benjamin Lowe in 1985. So we got to the part where he starts talking about listening energy, Ting Jing. And for such energy, do you use only your arms, or can it be generated in other parts of the body? Chen says, listening energy is the ability to feel the force, direction, and length of incoming energy. Practice with your arms at first and much later with your whole body. At the place you stick to an opponent, a feeling develops with which you can neutralize a palm or a fist so that he ends up striking emptiness. This is what is called really understanding listening energy. What do you think of that?
Yeah, well, I mean, that is the central thing of like push hands and stuff, is learning how to feel what the other person is doing, right? So
that's kind of the first thing you want to work on and develop. That's what this preface said too, that you start off following the other person.
It's the first thing. It's never stops being the thing. It may not always be the first thing, but that's always the, whenever you put your hands on someone else, the main thing, you know, or the first thing you have to do is engage that sense of, you know, listening to what's happening with them, between them and you, and, you know, all that stuff. So like,
he says you can stick with your whole body. So you stick to your opponent and develop a feeling so that you can neutralize when they strike, and they strike emptiness. So I guess you could listen with any part of your body when they reach out and touch you.
Listen with your whole, I mean, you're listening to their whole body with your whole body. I mean, it's like, is that sense of, it's the whole field, right? So any part of it, your field interacts with their field. And if you're sensitive enough to it, as soon as those two bubbles interact, you can feel what's going on.
Like you feel them. If there's any holes in the water balloon or whatever, you're going to feel that from a distance, kind of feel where the weak spots are kind of gushing out.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of like, I think of crumple zones in a car. That when, if you kind of resist for a second, their body starts to show its crumple zones. It's places where it's going to collapse if there's pressure.
Now, the longer you pressurize the whole thing, those weak links start to...
Right. So the longer you push on them, you know, the more they'll collapse, but also the more time they have to change and do something, right? So a football player just shoving towards you with everything he has, that will crush you instantly, in a sense, but you have the most time to like adjust to it because it's just coming at you straight, where things that are kind of moving around and coming at you from different angles, you know, it's harder to adjust to. So, but the central principle is, you know, as force starts to manifest or whatever coming towards you, you feel it and you feel where it's going and you feel its intent. And you know, like the thing of, I mean, if you've ever had the experience of Someone who really wants to hurt you throwing a punch at you is very different than someone throwing a punch at you who doesn't want to hurt you, even if the punch, like the punch that doesn't want to hurt you is harder. It's not going to hurt as much. It's like there's something about, you know, the intent behind it is, that hurts too, you know. It's like it's not just the impact of it, right? And this is why you can't really fully mimic what it's like to be in combat until you're in combat, because like everything else has that thing of you're gonna stop as you know, both people know consciously and unconsciously that they're not gonna go that far. And in the real, you know, thing, you don't know if the other person's willing to go that far.
So let's go on to the next zone. It says, can you have listening energy without sticking? That's an interesting one. So Chenemi replies, perhaps. Okay, so here's what he says. The internal school has three levels. Jing transforms to Qi. Qi transforms to Shen. And Shen transforms to Shu, emptiness. So we've returned to the three treasures once again. Mm-hmm. And here they're applying it. We've been talking to our Patreon about this concept for probably a couple of years now. But, here's where they've taken it from Taoism and applied it into the world of martial arts, to just sort of part of what created the internal martial arts movement. So here's how he describes it. So if one reaches the first level, Jing transforms to Qi. So he says, if you reach the first level, the body becomes strong and outside forces cannot penetrate. If one reaches the second level, this practice transforms the body so that it instantly responds to the mind. If one reaches the third level, then one forgets the opponent and the self. The body and mind do not exist, but become empty. Reaching this level, you are able to control your opponent without touching them. Ooh-wee, that's the highest level.
What I think he's talking about here is that your ability to be sensitive to the person's mind.
That sounds about right.
When they start to move, you already know what they're going to do. So it's like they're leading in, you know, you can lead that a little bit.
Right.
But it's not like, you know, you're going to push them from far away.
Right. Yeah, I agree. I don't think he's talking about distant, you know, attacks. It's more like, I don't need to be in full touch. If I'm really good, I don't have to touch you to see what your next move's going to be, because you're giving it away through subtle cues and how areas you're looking, or even just how your body posture is shaping itself. I'm going to see you coming.
Yeah. Like I can position myself in a way that I know is going to make your mind gap. Right, like that's kind of how I think of it.
Right.
I can
basically, my concentration
mind.
So much heavier than yours, yeah. That I'll see you glitching.
Yeah,
that's that. And it's interesting how they associate that with emptiness, in the sense that you have to clear away your own blinders and your own habitual thoughts and your own patterns have to be washed away before you can reach that empty state where you can truly perceive the other person really well. Because if you're sort of stuck in your own mind and your own thoughts, you'll never be able to sense someone else's intentions. And
well, yeah, I mean, the way Bruce describes this as far as the rollback thing, I mean, he just does it more on the physical level. But the first thing is, I have the structure that when you start to push, I can withdraw and not collapse. So I can move basically at the exact same speed in the opposite direction. So you never land on me, right? So there's never, we're touching, but we're moving, you know, it's exactly in the other direction. So, and I time it right so that I come back just as you're falling over and blah, blah, blah. The second layer is, or second level is, I actually let you push into me a little bit. And then I move back. So I'm slightly controlling where you're going. It's like I'm just barely steering it a little bit with my center. The third level is the thing of, I fully attach to you, and I, wherever I move, you move. So you're now, you're stuck to me in a sense, right? And then the fourth level is the thing, the magnetic hands thing that we've talked a little bit about before, where
legendary,
you put your hand on, and that's the same, yeah. That's the level of, you know, the Shen, essentially, where you're no longer dealing with energy and matter in the normal, you know, the normal rules don't apply anymore.
That's why they use these alchemy metaphors, because you're shifting the nature of reality itself, or, you know, you've gone beyond the normal rules at that point.
Yeah, it's very cool, rare to find that level. I mean, yeah.
Yeah,
at all at this that's point.
You got to have heights to shoot for, obviously, but you shouldn't take it too.
But I mean, you can be. There are some phenomenally good Tai Chi people who only do the first two. You know,
sure.
that like you don't. I mean, that for the application of it, for the health aspect of it, all that. You can use any of them or all of them, right? So if you just stick with one and you get really, really good at it, you know, you can go pretty far with that. If you have two, you can go even a little bit further. And if you have, you know, all three, you can go maybe to where you get four. But, you know, from everything I can tell, you have to start practicing it, you know, sometime around 9 or 10 and not stop until you're in your late 80s and you might get it. It's like, but
sounds looking,
it's a long time.
So here's another interesting one. So he says, the question is, Tai Chi seeks the supple, but what use is suppleness? And he says, okay, listen, seeking suppleness enables you to separate your body into pieces. If an opponent pushes against your forearm, your elbow doesn't move. If he pushes against your elbow, it moves, but not your shoulder. If he pushes against your shoulder, it moves, but not your body. If he pushes against your body, it moves, but not your waist. If he pushes against your waist, it moves, but not your leg. This process leaves you as stable as a mountain. That's kind of interesting. So, like, that's that folding idea in Tai Chi where someone will, like, shove on your arm, so you just let them do it, and then they run right into your elbow because it doesn't move, and they just, you know, their face flies straight towards your elbow, basically.
Yeah, I mean, he's just describing kind of how to use different techniques, but that was rare at this time. I mean, nowadays there's a million fucking books and videos of people going, okay, you do this, then you do that, right?
This is pioneering for sure. So it says, the use of suppleness is crucial. With it, you can be one unit attacking and fragmented parts defending. Able to be relaxed and hard, agile stepping forward or back, and substantial and insubstantial as needed. So that's interesting. So when you attack, you form one unit and hit with full body power. When you're being attacked, you break your body up into different isolated pieces that the opponent just sort of, it's like a bullfighter's cape. They push through the different parts that you let flap in the breeze.
Right.
But when you attack, you're unified.
You're yang when you attack. You're yin when you beat, when you get attacked, right?
Basically.
So the idea that when you're being attacked, you want to be light and agile and move,
right.
You know, flexible and all that stuff. And then at the moment that you are going to hit the person, you plant yourself and, you know, want to be stable.
Now you're stable as a mountain when you make contact. Yeah. And I love the idea of each part they push on, they find no resistance, but the whole rest of your body's it doesn't shake you up, right? Your balance stays the same. Even as they push against a leg, it moves out of the way, but the rest of you stays in place. That's what makes Tai Chi different than another martial art. Everyone wants to be agile and liquid and fluid, but like if you push against somebody and they just instantly give no resistance and you fall forward, that's Tai Chi, right?
Well, that's one aspect of it.
But that's the one that most other people don't have. There's a lot of people that are strong and can't move. Like Tai Chi does that too, but it's a hallmark of Tai Chi that I think I'm shoving you with all my strength and then there's nothing there and I stumble into it.
See, I mean, I think the higher level of Tai Chi is you don't have to, in a sense, get them to stumble into it. That you're actually controlling it before they're, you know, again, this is what we were talking about before, that, you know, one level of it is essentially a trick, right? You give them a little bit, they push a lot, you take it away, they fall over, and then you've got them, right? And that's sort of a timing and sensitivity thing. But there's also the level of, if you will, absorption, right? Where when you can start to use these openings and closings in your body and these compressions and these change, these pressures and things, and do all this sticking stuff, you don't really need to move. And this is where, or you don't need to move that much.
You need to move your feet a ton, yeah.
Well, you might move your feet, but you're moving them an inch instead of a foot, right? Like, it's everything is much smaller in terms of the external expression because you're able to, you know, your timing is that much better, essentially, right? So the art of, you know, Tai Chi as a boxing, quote unquote, boxing art is to be able to, you know, apply that ability to stick to somebody at, you know, as they're snapping a punch at you, you only have, you know, a fraction of a second to be able to touch their hand and feel all the way down to their foot, right? And so it's that ability that, you know, in that, when you get that little blap, right, you can touch their hand, but that gets all the way down to their foot and they're stuck on that foot for a second, right? And then that's when you move forward or whatever. So your level of sensitivity has to apply to their whole body, not just to the force that's coming at you, because there's equal force in going in opposite directions in their body too, right? So this is getting way off the, but you can attack the other leg, for example, right? So as they're pushing you from their front leg, you're pushing into their back leg and they kind of fall forward, you know, this kind of stuff. But you have to have that ability to feel through another human being, which is, again, that's where the all of this is built off of the listening energy, right?
And that's the beauty of push hands being the way to cultivate that. So that's kind of the genius of this Yang Cheng Fu Chen Wei Ming movement of push hands being the key to it all. So well, yeah, here's the next question. He says, if Tai Chi doesn't use resisting force, well, then why is it so hard to push him over? Because you'd think, you know, you try to push back would make you stronger. So Chen Wei Ming says, okay, although Tai Chi doesn't use resisting force, when you practice without force, you produce Peng Jing, ward off energy, in not only both of your arms, but in your whole body. If one reaches a high level, sometimes, even if one does not neutralize, one can still cannot be pushed because of the withstanding force is very strong. The key is not to resist purposely, but to cultivate standing like a mountain. So that's kind of what you were talking about too, a little bit.
Well, that's where if you just do it enough, I think it just becomes who you are, you know, like you it stops being
strong is everything.
Yeah, I mean, it stops being something you have to think about, and it's just how you react to stuff. You
know? Right, but he says you're not, like, trying to resist. That's the difference. You're just such a strong mountain that you could be pushed from either any direction, and you won't fall over, instead of resisting one direction, kind of. That's the impression I get.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a, you know, the simple way to think of it is all Tai Chi is Peng, right? That doesn't matter what direction I'm going, I have to have that, whatever that fullness, that rootedness is. And, you know, they over and over we've heard, you know, if you practice long enough, you get this just byproduct of having that heaviness and that rootedness. And this is the part where, you know, when you meet someone that's good at Tai Chi and they have that, it's like, oh, you know, it's like they just get you instantly. And they're like, you kind of, it's almost funny because you're just like, damn, guy got me that quick, you know? And, but that's rare because it takes so long to develop that because it's like how many times can you relax your shoulders? It's just every time you put your arm out, you get that sense of relaxing your shoulder. And then eventually it's like starts to go down your body and you're relaxing your whole body. And that hand going out's going to be rooted all the way to your foot. And you don't gotta think about it. For the first 6 years or so, you have to think about moving in a certain way so that those connections are made, through the forms. But once it becomes who you are and not something you do, it's a different game.
So the next they bring up the idea of huaqing, neutralizing energy, which is a little different than listening energy. This is another type of energy. So the question is, sometimes when you use force against an opponent, you feel nothing. Why is this? Ah, that is huajing, neutralizing energy. And he's the slogan. I remember it. Kumar used to say quite a bit called Buting Budong. Buting Budong, not disconnecting and not resisting. So it's like you don't resist them, but neither do you jump off of them. He
Yeah,
says,
don't push, don't pull, right? I
don't
mean,
push, don't pull, basically.
well, and this brings up the paradigm of push hands, right? How do you push without pushing, right? Without getting, and using force, right? Because the whole
But
thing,
neither do you give up and go limp. So it's like that.
right? Well, if you're not using force, right? Well, what is it that you're using to push them with? And you have to kind of a little head scratcher there. But again, the answer is pung, right? That's that rising energy coming up your body and your ability to relax into the pressure that's going to slightly lift the other person. And then once they're a little bit off balance, you can apply your technique, right? But it's that same just little bit of a get heavy and drop thing that's just becomes a constant at a certain point.
So he says, whether your neutralization is long or short, slow or fast, it should fit the opponent's push. He will feel as though he is meeting wind and shadows. Everywhere you go, he feels only emptiness. To a watcher, the form seems very light, but actually it incorporates the whole spirit to such a degree that the person watching doesn't realize you are all the time using your waist and legs. This is called being light as a feather. Like you were just saying, it's just like it's built into your waist and legs at that point. And this huajin is where you stay slightly ahead of the other opponent. They can't land on you. They feel like it's just wind and shadows, which is
Well, okay.
pretty
So
dope.
if you think about the pung being the thing that allows you to stay full and connected, right? The empty and full part of it, right? That as there's force applied to me, I can move in a way where it feels like I'm withdrawing, right? That like from the point of view of the person pushing, there's nothing there because I'm moving away from them just ahead of their force. But if they were to actually catch up to me, it's the running behind a truck and the truck slams on its brakes and you smash, smack into it, right? That, if they catch up to you, what they're going to encounter is that fullness, right? And so this is where some of the trickery is you do that all the time. You lead the person in, they think there's nothing there. And then as soon as they fully commit, you show your hand and then they get smacked. Right. So there's a lot of that ability to hide yourself, I guess. It comes from your ability to kind of change the shape of your palm, right? So in one sense, the other energies of Tai Chi are just how you morph that energy, right? So if I make my pung go in and down, we call it rollback, right? But it still has to have that quality to it. There's no way to get away from it.
It's got that full quality to it. So our next verse from Uncovering the Secrets of Internal Power in Tai Chi by Bai Hua discusses one of the songs of the 13 postures. So we've discussed a lot of different postures
Oh, this
here,
is the
and
second to last one. We're almost done.
the grand finale. It says, what is the purpose of studying and practicing the 13 postures? It is to make the practitioner's life longer and make their years as prosperous as the everlasting spring season, which is nice. So Baihua explains it like this. The exercise method of which the spirit of concentration is dominated by Jing, Qi, and Shen is the key element of Tai Chi. It is a waste of time and energy to practice Kung Fu without storing up Jing. The basic concept of human society is human-oriented. Therefore, the fundamental significance of practicing Tai Chi is to prolong one's life, and longevity requires strengthening energy and physique. To strengthen energy and physique, it must conform to the laws of yin and yang. And Tai Chi Chuan is exactly the exercise method of human body function that conforms to this law. This is a therefore type slogan here.
Well, and this to me is the key thing that points to this being written later and not being one of the older texts, is that there isn't much about martial arts. It's mostly about the mental and physical benefits of doing Tai Chi.
True.
And that was a later thing. And so the fact that he's saying that the primary purpose of it is to make you healthy, not to kick some fucking barbarian ass, is pretty telling.
Yeah, longevity and prosperity. And then he brings in Jing Qi Shen. So that's that Taoist health cultivation and spiritual cultivation that's really joining up with martial arts at this point. So yeah, that does sound like a later creation, where at this point these Taoist ideas have really intervaded and interflown, intergrown into the martial arts world. Yeah, and so it's a waste of time and energy to practice Kung Fu without storing Jing. That's this whole idea of Jing is really a big deal in Tai Chi, where your internal energy is used to either in sensitivity or in sending force out in a variety of directions or methods. But it's all one inner force. Rather than clumsy strength, you use inner force instead.
Well, and it's the storing of chi, just to keep it simple, right? Rather than blasting it out into space, that's what makes you healthy. So if you want the Tai Chi to make you healthy and to live a long time,
you've got to store it. You can flex it and throw it around, but you have to store it in order to get much value from the longevity side of it.
I mean, this from a practical sense is why you use the other person's energy instead of yours, right? And there's nothing wrong with using force and smashing somebody's face, but that requires that I use my energy.
Why would I waste my energy?
Well, that's one, you know, that's one unit of energy that I don't have at the end of my life, right? Where if I can borrow you and maybe even take some of your energy in the process, not only do I not use any force to kick your ass, I might gain a few bucks from doing it.
Right. Come out ahead.
As a youngster, what appealed to me about these arts was not that I would live a long time. It was that the stuff I was doing to kick the shit out of somebody wasn't using up, as Bruce would say, it's not using up your chi bank account, right? You're not blowing your wad to beat someone else up. You're at most breaking even, right? That you might use half of yours and half of theirs, but you never go past, you know, where you're using 90% your energy and 10% of theirs. Like, that's a waste of energy. It's like, why bother? And this is the, you know, essentially this is the 70% rule, right? That as long as I'm practicing where 70% of my energy is being stored and I'm using 30%, then I have this longevity thing in mind, where if I'm doing the flip side of that, for example, I'm burning up energy as I go and shortening my life, you know, at least from this perspective. That's the argument.
Yeah. And it's funny how we go through all those chapters, and then once we reach the end, finally we get this sort of definitive statement. You know, all along they're building and building the case. And then we reach the point of, hey, if you want to cultivate energy, use the Tai Chi method. And
well, right. And that's why I think, again, part of this was they plugged this in at the end to kind of summarize everything else, you know, whoever wrote this. Its purpose was to unify the previous.
Yeah, that would make sense. It's pretty pithy.
Yeah.
So here's Lewis Swaim's translation.
The Ten
of
Commandments
it.
Of it, you know.
Yeah, a little, yeah.
How do you
it's
sum
only a
up?
Couple pages.
You know, how do you sum up 500 pages of, you know, rules and regulations and relationships and all that stuff into something that somebody can remember in their head quickly?
Lewis Swaim translated it like this. If you want to go find out where, in the end, your purpose lies, it is to increase longevity and extends one's years. A springtime of youth. That's kind of nice.
It's a damn good argument for doing it, right? I mean, like,
basically,
not a lot of martial arts can say this will make you stay younger as well as teach you how to fight.
Right. I'd never encountered the idea of, geez, doing martial arts shouldn't damage me in the process, right? I didn't run into that until I ran into Chinese martial arts. So it's not a small thing. Like, I watching my son go through sports in high school and stuff, there's not a lot of discussion of like making sure you don't get hurt. The discussion is about winning games. Like, and so I think that's just how the nature of this type of stuff is. And Tai Chi found this other approach of like, well, you can win as, but also not hurt yourself in the process.
Well,
there's
right,
something
right,
about
right.
that's kind of a smart approach that I appreciate.
Well, or you can do things where winning isn't the only thing you care about. Like, is it worth winning a game to blow out your knee for your entire life? You know, that's the sort of the question that's being asked here. Is it's like, are you doing something where the winning is more important than the rest of your, you know, being
well, it's
able
short
to
term or long term,
right?
Those are your two concerns.
Like,
Which one are you going for?
Do you care about winning this? Because, you know, again, if your life is on the line, that is more important than your need.
Short term becomes very important at that point.
But when you're talking about sports and you're talking about martial arts for ego, right? The thing you have to think about is, you know, or take out fighting from it in general. Just talk about like doing a low squat. You know, is it worth me doing 10 years of being able to squat really, really low and then messing up my back or my knee or my ankle and never being able to practice again? Or do I practice where I squat, you know, a little bit less than that, and I can do it for the rest of my life without injuring myself.
Right.
And again, this is basically the 70% thing of, you know, if you just do things a little bit less than 100%, you always have that safety mechanism built into it. And this is both in Tai Chi as a martial art and Tai Chi as a health art. This is the thing that makes them special, right? And it's sort of why the two aspects of it, and even the, if you apply the meditation stuff, why that then also works too, is that's the central piece of how you achieve this, you know, this yin approach to things. And you know, that's the healing aspect of all these arts comes from their yin aspect, not from their yang aspect.
Makes sense to me.
Yeah.
I guess that's good enough for this episode.
Bye. Hey folks, hope you enjoyed the episode. Thanks for listening. Just a quick reminder, check out the Patreon for the extended episode and a bonus episode to go along with that. It's $5 a month for the basic membership, $10 a month for the full archive of everything we have up there. So hope you check it out, and thanks for listening, and take care.